Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 9th of June, recording at 7:23 p.m. British Summer Time. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes. But first, a quick review of the week. Lots of selling pressure, as you know, for global stock markets. But the firming started yesterday on Wall Street, pretty much Wall Street alone, and that led to a firmer tone, a clearly firmer tone in most of Asia here today, and also Europe. Europe was also helped by early strength in Wall Street, which then dissipated, but was reversed, really. And as I speak, though, Wall Street is moving back towards the plus side, but quite marginally so. Government bonds quietly steady this week, and U.S. dollar. We've had a bit of a bear squeeze here that has pushed the dollar up, and we have seen metals take some pretty big hits in here, very much in line with the medium-term correction comments that we've been making here. Oil firming up here today, up 125 as I speak at 71.65. And I think that's pretty much it. Some of the soft commodities that had rallied a bit last week have given up those gains, which were partly weather related, and it didn't turn out quite the way people were expecting as of last week. Okay, big picture long-term outlook. Well, first I maintain that this is very much a medium-term correction for global stock markets. Now, I know that there are a lot of people talking about bear markets and the possibilities of crashes, and I have written pieces saying that ham-fisted activity by the central banks, who had done their job really in raising interest rates, obviously they don't feel they've done their job. But if part of it of that job is to rein in asset markets, which had been rampaging on the upside for 3 years. So if that's one of their tasks, and if doing that would also help to, as it help to reduce inflationary pressures somewhat, as it would, then that part of their normalization of interest rates may well have carried far enough. Now, obviously, they don't think so, particularly the ECB doesn't think so. But my own view is that it would be a little bit cavalier, to put it politely, to ignore messages from markets overall, because there could be economic consequences if some of those more draconian forecasts that have been made for markets are borne out. My hunch is that that won't be the case, that central banks may talk tough, but will pay attention to the markets, certainly as this medium-term correction develops, and that it's really unlikely to be more than a medium-term correction. But you know, this is partly a bit of a guessing game here, is in terms of what the central banks are going to do. And I've said recently that the extent and shape of this correction that we're seeing will, if not be completely determined by the central banks, it'll certainly be heavily influenced by them overall. But as you know, we were due for a correction. We were due for seasonal reasons. Second year of the U.S. presidential cycle, the least bullish. I've been saying that for heaven's years. And we had the higher interest rates. We had the 39-month rally without a reasonable pause, without a medium-term correction, certainly. So this is normal overall. But did we have big bubbles beforehand? In stock markets, no, with the exception of some of the Middle Eastern markets. Excuse me. So I feel that the valuations were not so overstretched on the upside that a crash or a serious bear market was a high risk. And in that piece that I wrote yesterday, I was certainly making the point that a number of these markets have returned to quite reasonable and even quite attractive, particularly some of the emerging markets and some of the Asian markets valuations are concerned. So again, I'm not looking for more than a medium-term correction here. In the very short term, the selling might have been overdone a bit, but I can't really see much more than some right-hand extension in terms of the upside scope, right-hand extension to the type 2 top formations that I have written about and discussed really at length. So I think this is still going to remain a tricky period in here, and that a concern over further central bank rate hikes, along with seasonal factors, along with the normal corrective process that's underway in markets, is more likely than not, I would say very likely, to prevent rallies from getting up and retesting the highs, let alone extending the bull run that we saw. Really, from March 2003 right on through for many markets into running into May 2006. So I look for a further correction. If central banks are, well, remain ham-fisted, then we could easily see the lows sooner rather than later. A further sell that would be involve a further sell-off. Steep continuation of the steep decline that we've seen to date. And well, that would be good news in terms of long-term accumulation. It would probably also mean a fairly lengthy consolidation, convalescence period before we got a sustainable uptrend. Now, my best guess still is that this medium-term correction will be done and dusted before the end of October, and that we will be moving back into quite an attractive environment for equities. Now, in the meantime, though, we've got to deal with the flak of the correction, the flak of a slowdown in global economic activity, the flak of profits doing some mean reversion here overall. Sentiment, which was certainly complacent as it always is on the upside, is likely to overreact here. And I would tend to regard sentiment as a contrary indicator. You know, when you're getting euphoric forecasts on the upside by a number of commentators, then you know we ought to know that the risks are certainly increasing and that rally may well be moving into injury time. And conversely, when we get draconian forecasts on the downside after a sharp sell-off, that's usually a pretty good indicator, contrary indicator as well. So as I said yesterday in the piece I wrote, and hopefully also in the audio, I'm not becoming more bearish as markets go down. I expected this correction, as you know, and I really regard it as creating another, well, at first as an inevitable event that takes place in the cycles of markets, and I regard it as bringing markets back to what will be quite attractive buying levels. But I'm in no great hurry to go rushing into the markets at this stage. Okay, on a longer term basis, than that, well, how far ahead did I actually project on this? As I said, I think the correction will be over by the end of October, if not sooner, and it could certainly be sooner. but that really from late October onwards will be in quite a favorable environment for stock markets. And if we get the economic slowdown, as I think we will see to a certain extent, that would certainly take the upward pressure off interest rates. And we could even see some interest rate cuts in 2000 and 2007. So this is a case where too much good news in the form of GDP growth right now just means further interest rate hikes, whereas clear evidence of a slowdown and some easing in those incipient inflationary pressures, these were certainly not rampant inflationary pressures, would create a favorable environment for equities because it would cause central banks to resume some of their monetary easing. So that's kind of what I envisage, and against that background, I would look for a fairly bullish 2008 as well. Now, in terms of sectors and markets, first, I believe very strongly in the commodity super cycle. Industrial commodities are certainly experiencing a medium-term correction here right now. And as you know, they've been moving in lockstep with the Dow and other US indices, very influenced by moves in stock markets recently. They'll uncouple once again at a later date, but right now this has been a case of unwinding of leveraged positions by lots of investors around the globe. So when stock markets plunge, that drags down the resources as well as people reduce their leveraged exposure in that sector as well. But my feeling is that resources will remain an exceptionally bullish sector over the longer term. And you know all my arguments for that, or they're certainly available in the Comment of the Day archives for any new subscribers who would want to review that in more detail. And the other sector that I am very, very fond of is emerging markets generally. Now, of course, those are high beta. I've emphasized that they're high beta all along. So when you get a selling squall, let alone a selling panic, such as we have been seeing, a minor panic, such as we have seen in the last few weeks, then those markets are more likely than not, emerging markets are more likely than not going to fall more than the DAXs and the FTSEs and the Dow Jones Industrial Averages. And one of the developments that we have also seen is a shift from small cap to big cap. And we'll want to watch those small cap indices as lead indicators when markets are not only showing signs of bottoming out, but have patterns capable of sustaining further advances. So for Japan, I would expect to see the bullish indications coming from the TSE2, that second section index, for instance, before I would expect to see confirmation on the Nikkei or the topics. They could be coincidental, but more often than not, the second section will lead. And of course, I'd like to see that confirmed by by the banking sector as well. Now, we may get some, probably will get some temporary firming indicating a technical rally, but I want to emphasize, I don't think we're at the end of this medium-term correction, although for some markets we may have seen most of the decline, or certainly well over 50% of the decline. That would be most of the decline, provided that central banks don't do anything too foolish in terms of really leaning on these markets while they're already nervous and in a corrective phase. And you can never be sure with central banks. So we'll just have to wait and see how they actually play it. And government bonds, well, it's been a muted response here overall in terms of the in terms of the rally to date. That's because of the concern over longer-term inflationary pressures. Now, you know my view on inflation in all probability. Certainly the veteran subscribers do. I maintained that several years ago that the central banks had already sown the seeds for a next inflationary cycle. That was very much a minority view. And I described it as an inflationary cycle that would be, it would be inflation by stealth, and we would see at least in the manufacturing areas due to globalization and global competition, the China factor and so on. But we started to see it early on, not surprisingly, in the household bills that people were paying every month. Now, I have also emphasized, and it's important that I make sure everybody who's interested in the subject understands this, I've also emphasized that while we are in a long-term inflationary cycle, that I did feel that it would build up very gradually, incrementally, and that it would also be a fluctuating trend, just like any market trend. And having seen inflation flare up a little bit in the last few months, and that worrying the central banks, who of course are responsible for the inflation, it's always a almost always a monetary phenomenon. They are now talking tough, trying to rein that in a bit. They will have some success, and the falling asset prices that we see will help to cause that inflation to contract a little bit, and it'll dampen down any early stage inflationary psychology, and there hasn't been much of that around, as you are probably well aware. So again, they'll have some success. They'll declare a partial victory against inflation prior to easing monetary conditions again, probably in 2007. A medium to longer term risk is some stagflation. You get central banks overreacting. They may overreact in this cycle, in which case we would get a slower growth than is really called for to deal with inflationary pressures. And you know, if we have, for instance, whether you believe the figures or not, let's say we have CPI inflation at 3%, and if we have growth at 4 or 5%, well, that's a better situation, obviously, than if we have the inflation at 3% and growth down at 1.5 or 2% overall. So again, there is a risk that central banks will overreact and create a stagflation situation. And that's certainly going to happen, in my view, at some stage. Whether it's 2007 and 2008 or not, remains to be seen. Hopefully not. Okay, returning to government bonds, the yields are still historically low. They're not that attractive in real terms, that's for certain. And again, we've had the flood of debt coming from all these governments. As I had been saying for months and months and months and months, if governments are issuing 30, 40, and even 50-year debt, do we really think that those governments believe that yields, long-term yields, are going to do anything other than rise over the next 5, 10, 15, 20 years? Of course not. They'd be very foolish to be issuing the very long-term debt if they thought that yields were going to stay down or go lower, let alone go lower. So they know full well of the inflationary pressures that are in the pipeline that will slowly emerge, as I've said. So they're trying to borrow cheaply now while they can. That's been the case for over a year. Moving on to currencies, here the main story is usually the dollar, and that's still the case today. I mentioned that we were seeing a little bit of a bear squeeze. A lot of people were short the dollar as it fell down, and at a gradually increasing rate from the November highs that we had seen last year. And we've seen a bit of a retreat to the dollar recently and some short covering and so on. If you look at the charts, there's plenty of overhead supply for the dollar, certainly on its dollar index chart. My hunch is that we've probably already seen the best part of this short covering rally by the dollar. It may go on a little bit further, but any additional gains will probably prove fairly difficult to maintain. But we may need to see sentiment shift a bit to the point where, when you turn on Bloomberg TV or CNBC, that number of analysts are actually taking a more bullish stance on the dollar. As you know, a month ago when the dollar was down around its lows, to date, people were extremely bearish. So you may need to see that type of behavioral clue in the marketplace before the dollar gets into trouble once again. But my view is that the US is very much of the view that they need a weaker dollar. They certainly don't want a dollar collapse. They don't want an accelerating decline. That would smack of a crisis. But I do expect Paulson and Bernanke to cooperate in helping to engineer a gradually weakening dollar more often than not. And the best way to do that is, of course, to print more of the stuff. And the strong currency area, if you look at those long-term charts, and from time to time we put up that chart of the that index of the Asian currencies. It's got a very, very nice base that had been really forming since 1998 after the Asian crisis onwards, and it has completed that base and is gradually moving up. But as you know, a lot of those countries are or go to great lengths still to keep their currencies from appreciating too rapidly. But suffice it to say that that's where we will see some of the strongest growth over the next decade or more, and eventually and inevitably that will be reflected in stronger currencies there as well. My long-term view on the dollar is that it's not likely to do much beyond a retest of that 80-78 region on the US dollar index, but that's heavily European weighted, as you probably know. And industrial commodities. Well, I mentioned that I'm a big believer that this is a commodity supercycle bull market here. That would be logical following the 21-year bear market that we saw for most industrial resources and also the precious metal sector. And commodity cycles tend to be quite long relative to cycles for many other asset classes and financial markets. And I don't expect this to be any exception. And the only thing that I think could really seriously disrupt the commodity bull market cycle, as I've mentioned before, would be some sort of ecological disaster of biblical proportions or some horrendous pandemic. Now, both of those possibilities are talked about fairly frequently, but they remain very, very much minority possibilities, hopefully. And I'm certainly not going to be predicting some type of nightmare scenario here. We ought to be able to avoid that. So, short of that happening, and I've already said I don't think that will happen, the commodity supercycle continues. And the big driver here will be demand from all of these rapidly developing economies that have embraced capitalism over the last few years or more and are building cities and want the consumer products for their people, understandably, And this is creating an enormous demand for these industrial resources, oil, all the metals. And I don't see that changing very much. And the supply side is really, really struggling to catch up. And I don't think that it will catch up all that effectively here. So I think part of that inflation picture will be these rising resources prices, inevitably in a very jagged trend fashion. As I've said, we're already experiencing what could be a lengthy medium-term correction for resources. So it's by no means a one-way street, but I do maintain that this is a secular bull market, and thus my investment and trading interest in this area. And agricultural commodities, more of a weather play, but again, whenever we have synchronized global economic growth, then demand is likely to be rising. And as living standards improve in many of these big population developing countries, that will increase demand for many of these soft commodities, agricultural commodities as well. And that will test production capacity from time to time, which will also be exacerbated by adverse weather conditions from time to time. So we will see some price spikes there, but those trends tend to be far more volatile because it's easier for commodity producers to plant more wheat or corn or sugar beet or whatever we're talking about in the next crop year. They can increase supply more readily given reasonable weather conditions than mining companies that have to wrench these metals from the earth, often in remote parts of the world. So obviously the supply and elasticity factor is far greater, more often than not, for the industrial resources sector. And that's pretty much a wrap. It's been an exciting week, almost too exciting. I will enjoy time with the family and view a little bit of sport over the weekend. And whatever you're doing, I hope it's very pleasurable. All the best.